Welcome to Artrageous, a weekly podcast about the truly outrageous stories in the art and design world. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Artrageous. Last week, I talked about my experience using the AI generator Midjourney to create podcast art. I had actually outlined that episode back in March after working on the piece, and at the time, it got me thinking about how other people might use AI in their workflows. Well, it just so happens that I know someone who can provide some insight. So a couple of weeks ago, when I had to travel to Columbus, Ohio for work one day to record some video, I stopped over at a friend's house and did some recording for Artrageous. What you're about to hear is the conversation that I had with him. I had originally planned on it being included as a second half to last week's episode, but you know me, I get to talking, and by the time I included everything I wanted to, it would have been about an hour-long episode, and I'm not going to do that to you guys. So instead, my conversation with Joe gets a standalone episode, and we get another opportunity to talk about the current hot topic of AI and how it's impacting the creative industry. So let's dive into that interview. Okay, I think I've successfully switched mental gears from this morning's video recording mode to this evening's audio recording mode. I think we have all this audio stuff set up correctly, so let's just get started. For our listeners, a little background here. I usually focus on visual arts on the show, but I thought it would be fun to also get the perspective of someone who has used AI for writing, especially since copywriting is a huge part of the design world as well. Even though I spent all of 5 minutes playing with ChatGPT during that Jeff Koons episode, Joe Weidenhofer is a copywriter with experience in using AI chatbots in a more professional setting. So welcome to the show, Joe. Go ahead and tell everyone listening a little bit about you.
So I am a copywriter, and what that is, you know, you see websites, billboards, social media, stuff like that. That is the content that I write for. Sometimes it could be content writing, which is to inform, or copywriting, which is to kind of sell or convert people. So on a day-to-day basis, I create content. Like right now, I'm working on some original website content. I write some social media, work on submitting some award show writing on behalf of a client. And so it's more just about looking at the strategy for different clients and then creating content for them.
And usually they give you some kind of creative brief. They don't just let you write whatever you want to, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of like a professional wordsmith. You get a writing brief from a lot of clients, and then you still have to do a lot of research on your own to kind of know what your audience is. You know, you could be writing to a general audience or someone that's expert level, you know, like a business to business or a business to consumer. And it kind of just depends on incorporating that information to reach your targeted audience.
So are you just sitting down at a computer for most days, or like what does that creative workflow look like to get things onto the paper or computer screen, I guess?
I work from home, and I have been for the past year. And originally I used to be the person that had to go into the office to work. Now, if I go into the office, I get too distracted. There's too many people to talk to. And sometimes when you're writing, you need that focus time and to kind of hammer out some of the content. And so right now I typically will get a brief, write the content, and if I have questions, I'll call the account leads or talk to other people with the different agencies that I'm working with right now.
What tools are you using on a day-to-day basis? Is it just good old-fashioned Microsoft Word, or have we grown up a bit since the 90s?
No, everything uses Google Drive. It's kind of a pain sometimes when people use Microsoft, but no offense to Microsoft. But yeah, mostly Google to research, and then Google Docs. And then occasionally with one agency client, I use a AI writing tool called Jasper. In the original marketing content of the email when I first signed up, they referred to it as, it's the Robin to your Batman, me being Batman, Jasper being the Robin. It's kind of like from the movie Iron Man, where Jarvis is the AI that kind of helps Tony Stark, and this is kind of fills that role in a sense, just a little less sophisticated.
Was it something that when you first encountered it, were you kind of nervous about it? Were you excited? What was your take on using this new technology?
It was a bit of both. It was a bit of an excitement, a little apprehension. I think my greatest fear was in the beginning was that I was going to rely on this too much and then I wasn't going to be able to write on my own. That was a big fear. But what I realized while using the tool is at almost the pain of not getting the right feedback for a client, I was just using the AI to write pretty much original content, but it would come back as discombobulated, disjointed. Jasper only has information up to 2021. So like if there were some modern trends and things, it wouldn't pick up on that. But then after that, what I kind of started using it for was it's like a second reader. You know, when you stare at content all day, it kind of just becomes very homogenous. And so you can use that, like there's a tool to rephrase things. There's a tool to, you can like take a complex sentence and there's a button that says explain it to a fifth grader. So to simplify stuff. And so I've kind of used that, like if I have a word or a phrase that I can't think of, I'll rephrase it using the rephrase button. It kind of gives me a shape to what I want. Or you can put in the prompt, like write dot, dot, dot in this form or for this kind of content. And it'll produce a thing. And I'm like, oh, that's the phrase that I was missing that I just couldn't figure out. So it kind of helps with that.
So you're using it more as a tool rather than relying on it to do the work for you.
It's more of a tool because if you do try to rely on it to work for you, there's going to be stuff that's lost in translation, like tone and target audience. It may look good on paper, but when you read it out loud to yourself and like, this is not what I was expecting. This is not what I wanted. And then if you try to use it as the, you know, the main source, what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to go back and edit it. And it's like, why did I even, you know, you're actually probably going to create more work for yourself.
Yeah, I think in some ways, from things that I've seen, it can be really fun to go in and see what responses you can get from this program. But half of the time, it comes back and there's things there that are just like, what is this machine even saying right now?
And like for example two, I've used it for like a resume. You use either like ChatGPT or the Jasper tool. And it's like you have what you're saying and you think it's the right way, but maybe is there another better way to do it? And it kind of gives that second perspective. You could be like, nope, this is what I originally had was perfect.
Yeah, I think that's the big misconception is you go in and you just feed a prompt to a machine and it'll give you back exactly what you need. And now people are obsolete. But from what you're saying, it's still in its infancy and we still need people on the other end.
Yeah, and I think that is a general fear when there's any major technical advancement. Like I'll use the example of the Industrial Revolution. A big personal example that my father was familiar with was the conversion to electronic health records. So it's like you had all these paper and while you lost some jobs with the paper health records, you gained jobs in the technology. So that's the kind of thing is we might long term down the road, you might lose some jobs here and there, but eventually there's going to be more jobs created to help manage and facilitate that kind of stuff.
Okay, so theoretical question, sky's the limit. What would you think would be the best thing that AI could do for you? Like, what would you like to be able to see AI do to help you in your workflow? Or is it already doing it?
I think, honestly, as of right now, I don't really have anything that's sky high limit to like explore because what I use it for right now is really what I would foresee myself using it in the future. The only thing that could possibly help is if you had some long form copy to write that is more newsletter based, that is maybe like a proposal for someone and you're trying to hit the right points, but you can't find the right tone. So you get the content, but then you can shape it the way you want. I think the biggest challenge I find when writing is the blank page. I could just sit there and do a brain dump in 5 minutes and have content on the page. But once there's words on the page, it's easier to shape. And I think that is going to be what helps. The ChatGPTs of the world or the AI writing may not produce the best content, but that puts stuff on the page that you can then go in and edit and shape. It's like if you're throwing clay, like on a pot, you get a blob of clay, but you have the blob and your hands are what you use to write and you're shaping the clay into the perfection that you want to make it. The AI is the glob of clay and your writing and your knowledge and your skills and expertise are shaping that content to what you want.
It's kind of like, what is it? I've seen this thing among visual artists where it's called new sketchbook syndrome. where when an artist gets a new sketchbook, it's just nothing but blank white pages. And in their head, they think, oh my God, I'm going to mess this thing up right off the bat. Like, what do I even put in here? Almost like a little bit of an artist block. So to overcome that new sketchbook anxiety, some artists will do color swatches, some will draw something they've drawn 100 times, some do silly little doodles, and some artists literally just scribble all over the first page. Go ahead and ruin the sketchbook right off the bat just to get started.
Yeah, and that's kind of the same thing I'll do even for some projects. It's like, I don't know what I'm going to write about, but I'll like set a 5-minute timer and we'll not hit the backspace. It'll be filled with spelling errors, punctuation. You get all the red and blue lines like, oh, this is wrong, this is wrong. You really have to fight that urge to go back and correct everything, but you just go continuously. And it may come out to scribble or dribble or whatever. But having words on the page or having drawings in a book really kind of helps set the tone for what you're going to do.
I think that's a really interesting parallel between, I mean, I do a lot of the visual side of art on this podcast, but there's a whole other side for things that aren't typically considered creative. A lot of people don't realize that everything in our lives, from the chairs we sit in, you know, an industrial designer made the design. And I think now that AI has really come into the world, we're starting to get copywriters or even just artists in general saying, hey, that's my job. And there's been a little, or actually probably a lot of pushback. So what do you think, or what ideas might you have for helping creatives get over any kind of fears of AI or just experimenting with the tool?
I think right now we're kind of the whole creative industry, artists and writers and all that, and even outsiders are kind of suffering from new toy syndrome. Like, it's new, it's shiny, it's fresh. Everyone wants to have it. Everyone wants to use it. But I think as time goes on, we're going to kind of get, you know, kind of get a flow. You're going to have probably regulations and certain things that go on this, new laws that are put on the books. And so my advice would be patience. I know it's a kind of cliche thing to do, but you'll have the innovators and people will push the boundaries, then there'll be blowback, and then we'll kind of, the pendulum will shift and we'll be a little bit in the middle ground. And it's more of a kind of wait and see. In every industry, there are people that like push the boundaries and then the masses kind of pull it back. And I think that's what's going to happen with this.
What are some of the other thoughts that you want to say about AI that you maybe wish people knew, or just whatever you want to say on the subject while I'm giving you my podcast platform to get your thoughts out there?
I think AI is definitely going to be a powerful tool. I don't think it's ever going to be like the Skynet, or we have the Uncanny Valley and have to do the Turing test like in Ex Machina. Great movie, by the way, 2016. Go watch it if you haven't seen it. But what I think I'm seeing a lot too, you know, you haven't seen like AI write a book. You haven't, or it may have happened, but you haven't heard about it. And if you haven't heard about it, it's either because it's so bad no one wants to share it, or it hasn't been properly done yet. I think a lot of like the short form stuff is really where that's going to shine. And then you're still going to need the people who can craft the story, tell a really good story, and write that way. There's ghostwriters, authors, all that kind of stuff. In 10 years' time, when this podcast is number one, I think it would be fun to like revisit, you know, like what people originally said and when this all became a thing. And it is definitely recent. Like, even on a different tangent, investing wise, there were a couple like AI companies that was really flying on the radar. But once it took storm, there were several companies that overnight or over a week were up 40-50% in their market valuations. Like Google, for example, they debuted their Bard and there was a fact check and that proved the wrong error, and Google market cap lost 9% in a half a day. For a company that large, that's $200 billion in value that investors perceived and lost market cap just because of that one small error.
Dang it, this conversation is so good. I had meant for that last question to kind of close this out, but now I have another question, so I'm just going to go ahead and ask it. Elon Musk. Okay, I see that twinge and that look you're giving me. But he was on the ground floor of the AI thing with the OpenAI project. You know, he was a board member of OpenAI in 2015, and then he stepped down in 2018. But now it's 2023, and we're seeing him and a lot of other tech people signing petitions and writing letters saying, hey, let's back off for a little bit. What are some of your thoughts on that? Should we keep pushing forward? Should we pull back? Should we proceed with caution? What do you think?
Well, you know, we could keep going down and we're going to have a Skynet, but No, I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's been a strong surge in interest. And, you know, as market cycles and people's attention spans kind of change and are getting a little shorter, I think it's going to kind of fall out of favor. Got to wait till something else comes in. But I think what will happen is once the masses kind of start, where it's not the most recent, the newest thing to talk about, then it'll just naturally kind of slow down a little. I think creating that petition is only going to draw more attention to it and continue the conversation. And realistically, what should happen is if there's like a news, you know, as we record the podcast talking about AI in the world, but if there's a slowdown on the conversations that happen, I think there will be a slowdown in the development, at least as what's forefront. Because right now, every new development, big or small, is a major development. With any new technology, it's kind of that way. But now, like, you look at cars, it's like, oh, we had the assembly plan. Oh, now we added seatbelts and then airbags, power steering. Don't have to work out to drive. Once, you know, it becomes a little more normalized, then we'll probably only see, you know, mentions of things once there are big, big changes and that kind of thing.
Joe, thank you so much for coming on this podcast and just volunteering some of your time. I know we've been talking about getting you on the show to talk about this topic ever since the AI-generated art episode was released. Gosh, that was all the way back in January, which seems like yesterday and forever ago all at the same time. So thank you for coming on the show and giving me and the listeners just a different perspective aside from what I usually bring to the table and providing insight into a creative field that I just don't have as much of a background or super strong insight to, you know? I love being able to reach out to others and talk to people about things and learn new stuff. So yeah, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yes, thanks. Thank you, Gary. And a little shameless plug here. If people wanted to reach me to discuss more about AI or need any copywriting services, you can find me at my website at starshipcopywriting.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We just wrapped up an interview with a copywriter named Joe Weidenhofer, and I'm so glad we got the chance to have an actual full-blown interview on Artrageous for the first time. It was so fun to sit down and just let the conversation flow. You know, a lot of times as I'm sitting in the recording studio, I kind of just follow some bullet points and get into the story, but I always know where the episode is going to end up. So to sit down with only like 5 or 6 questions on a piece of paper and not even have to use them was a really fun experience. If you enjoyed it, please let me know by leaving me a review in your podcast app. I have a couple more episode ideas where I would love to get other people onto the show, so let me know what you think. I also wanted to close out this episode with a couple more items that are kind of like leftover bits from the last episode, especially since there have been a lot of current events happening regarding this whole AI situation. You know, in some ways, it's kind of like how back in 2020, we couldn't go a single day without hearing or reading about COVID, and now we're in 2023, and instead of COVID, it's AI. I'm pretty sure I haven't gone a day without hearing at least something about AI, even ever since I published that first episode in January. So let's just super quickly catch up a little bit on recent events and a little bit of commentary, shall we? The first thing I wanted to touch on was the Elon Musk comment that I made during the interview with Joe. I mentioned that he was a board member of a company called OpenAI back in 2015. And for those of you who don't know, OpenAI is an artificial intelligence research company whose declared intention is promoting and developing a friendly AI. If you've ever heard of the AI text generator ChatGPT or the AI image generator DALL-E, then yep, that's the work of OpenAI. And maybe it's unfair of me to assume that all of the listeners for this episode know about these programs, but for the sake of time and relevance to the actual topic, I'm not going to go into depth, but what is relevant is that the progression of AI technology with ChatGPT, DALL-E, even Midjourney, really caught the attention of people, especially developers in the tech world. With the advancements in the technology for those programs, in early 2023, we started to see Microsoft integrating its own AI into technology in its platforms like Microsoft Bing, Microsoft Edge, Microsoft 365, and its other products. We then saw Google release Google Bard in March, which they describe as your creative and helpful collaborator, here to help supercharge your imagination, boost your productivity, and bring your ideas to life. And all of that sounds well and good, but even companies like Adobe are dipping their toes into the AI waters. I had to dig into my notes a bit for this one, but I found where Adobe released Photoshop 22.0 back in October of 2020. And this version of Photoshop was where we first saw how Adobe was playing with AI through their introduction of something called neural filters. I think at the time, I didn't realize it was powered by AI. I mean, that was probably because we were all so focused on other things at the time. But looking at the official description of Photoshop's neural filters, Adobe writes, "Powered by artificial intelligence and machine learning engine Adobe Sensei, neural filters use algorithms to generate new pixels in your photos. This allows you to add non-destructive edits and explore new creative ideas quickly, all while keeping the original image intact." Now, as a file hoarder and a huge proponent of non-destructive photo editing, you know, meaning that you aren't making permanent changes to the original file that just can't be undone, I was really intrigued by this concept. In theory, neural filters work on everything from taking repetitive Photoshop tasks such as removing acne to colorizing black and white photos or changing a person's expression. An example would be, you know, you take a group photo and one person in the group of 20 isn't smiling, then Photoshop's neural filters might be able to help. Now, if only they could get us to open up eyes in all the family photos we have where I'm blinking right as that camera clicks. But I'll admit, I haven't really run into an opportunity to use the neural filters that much in my daily workflow yet, but they are really intriguing, and I know they keep releasing more and more improvements, so it's just a matter of time before they really fine-tune these things and make them so that they are absolute powerhouses in a creative workflow. You know, overall, I think the biggest Photoshop upgrade I've used is the much-improved Select Subject feature that makes it so much easier to remove the backgrounds from coworkers' phone selfies so that we can then use those photos in professional contexts. So yeah, if anyone has any information or firsthand experience with these neural filters, please let me know, and maybe we can include that in an upcoming episode I have in mind about the history of Adobe and Adobe Photoshop. So shoot me an email at artrageous.artpod@gmail.com because I would love to hear the thoughts of creative people and get some alternative perspectives. But anyway, where I was actually going with this not-so-quick tangent is that Adobe also recently introduced the beta version of Adobe Firefly. I got the email in my inbox towards the end of March, and it actually looks like a really cool tool if it works how they say it's supposed to. Looking at their website, they pitch it as generative AI made for creators. Looking at the webpage, it reads, "With the beta version of the first Firefly model, you can use everyday language to generate extraordinary new content. Looking forward, Firefly has the potential to do much, much more." And then it goes on to entice people with headlines like "Unlimited creative options, fast," or "Instant creative building blocks," and "Astounding video edits, simplified," which honestly, as a creative, those are things that I do every day. So to simplify that with AI is really, really intriguing. But at the same time, it still sounds way too good to be true. And then when I clicked on the Join the Beta button, I basically got sent to a page to request access to use these tools. So unfortunately, I don't yet have any insider information to give anyone yet, but as soon as I get my invitation email to try it out, then we might have even more to talk about. And with artists in mind, you know, if we look back to Artrageous episode 2, I talked about how AI has impacted artists whose work was included in that data set used to train the models these AI programs were built on. Looking at Adobe Firefly, I find it interesting that Adobe, whose lifeblood literally is creatives and their need for programs to create, is also fighting the good fight for artists, or at least they're claiming to, by promoting its Content Authenticity Initiative, where they're committed to working towards this universal Do Not Train content credentials tag that's almost like a piece of metadata that's going to remain associated with a piece of content wherever it's used, published, or stored. Basically, this tag will give artists the ability to flag their work and protect it from being used for AI training. Time's going to tell how well this works, but it seems like a really good start. Really, all of my babbling here is just to say that it doesn't look like AI is going anywhere, and it's probably here to stay. To remind us of what Joe said in our discussion earlier in the episode, there's been a lot of interest in AI technology recently, and it's kind of like a shiny new toy. But naturally, all of this hype is going to slow down a bit, and we won't have so many major developments. But there will still be developments, and the technology will become more normalized. What I found interesting was this clip from Gary Vaynerchuk, or Gary V. If you don't know who that is, that's okay. He's an American entrepreneur, and I guess you could call him an internet personality. And I would even go so far as to say he's a bit of a mindset coach as well. But he has a very interesting view on a lot of things, especially as they relate to business and current events. I was browsing Facebook the other day, and this was something that I came across.
If you are not using AI tools every day of your life, you're making a huge mistake. You've got to start training. Whether you need it or not is irrelevant. You're gonna need it, and you're gonna interact with it every day, so the faster you're good at it. Remember when you met executives 20 years ago, 10 years ago, that still don't even use email, and they have their like secretary print out the email, like when it felt so weird? That's how not using AI will feel.
Now, I'll admit, I'm not old enough to have experienced people resisting the adoption of email, but even today, I do still run into times when the idea of collaborating in a cloud-based environment is more difficult for some people versus others. I mean, versus the 1994 Microsoft Word, you know, Google Drive, Docs, and Sheets is just better, even though the jury is still out on Google Slides. But all jokes aside, it comes down to AI being a learning curve thing. And I think that if AI is here to stay, then maybe I'm not the only one thinking that we better start getting a little bit more comfortable with it. And I'm seeing some artists doing just that. They're actively using it in their work to varying degrees, and I'm actually very intrigued by it. One example is a photographer named Terry Campbell, who uses AI in his photography workflow. Here's a quick clip that touches on that one just a little bit.
My name is Terry Campbell. I'm a commercial food and drink photographer and director. So most of my work is not the conceptual kind of stuff. I do a lot of Photoshop, but it's because food isn't perfect. You know, we end up touching a lot of things up, but most of my work is probably 50% packaging and 50% point of purchase. Think venues or things like that, packaging that you see in the store. So that's the majority of my work. And I've been in the AI space probably for about 6-8 months now, kind of got into it last fall and have just tried. I immediately saw some opportunities to use in my work, and I've tried to just incorporate it into the things I'm already doing. I've done two projects that were paid for using Midjourney and AI. One was to create a background for another product, and they just stripped that product in front of it, created the background specifically to work with it, so it would, you know, look natural when they stripped it in. And then the other one was for a Fortune 500 company. And we were doing a combination of product photography and more graphic AI generated image. It wasn't anything that looked actually real. It was meant to be more, just artistic, I guess, to merge with that product photography. Now, it was early stages of the product. So it was something that they were doing for kind of conceptual, you know, as it moves the design forward. So I don't know if the AI will stay a part of it or if it was just kind of for the first round, but you know, it was utilized in those ways to be a part of that. So I'm finding that I do have uses for it and that I can work it into things. And certainly for content creators, I think it's a huge, huge opportunity. If you've got a, you know, like I stripped in a cake box to a kitchen set, and I thought, you know, if you were just doing this for Facebook, like you couldn't build a kitchen set and shoot the cake box in it for 3 days on Facebook. But if I can create the whole kitchen in AI and just shoot a cake box on gray, I can do that for 3 days on Facebook. So for content creation, I think this has got some huge possibilities and probably not open to as many of the copyright issues because, you know, you're just putting it up quickly on a social media channel. You know, probably not as likely to get called out as if it's on a package on store shelves nationwide.
The audio clip that you just heard was from a webinar recording from a group called the American Society of Media Photographers, or ASMP, that hosted a webinar on March 14th, 2023, called Photography in the Age of AI: What Happens Next? It's about an hour and 40-minute recording that has a lot of really great info in there about AI that's applicable to more than just photography. I'm talking about things from potential applications for AI to discussions about legal questions that arise with the use of AI. So if you're interested, you can find the recording under the Articles and News tabs at asmp.org, or if I remember, I'll try to include the link in the show notes. In other related news, AI and photographers also reached the media when the Sony World Photography Awards was handing out awards for different categories, you know, just as award things do. And they awarded a black and white portrait photo as the winner of the creative category. The German photographer Boris Edgelson, please forgive me for butchering that name, but he's now actually declined the award, calling himself a cheeky monkey because the image he entered was actually an AI-generated image. What I find interesting is that usually when you're submitting a work to a contest, there's some kind of write-up or artist statement or something that explains things like the medium in which the work was created, maybe something about the process or about the work in general or its meaning. Even though the photographer included disclosures in his entry about it being an AI-generated image, his intent was to spark conversation, including an open Q&A with him about the topic on the official website. But after almost 3 weeks without receiving questions, he decided to decline the award on stage at the award ceremony in London in April. So it sounds like there's still a lot of work that needs to be done in how AI-generated works are treated. There's also still those pesky legal questions around AI, and those decisions will most likely be a while in coming since the legal system is notoriously slow to react, let alone to this constantly changing technology. Really, I guess the takeaway from this episode is that AI is most likely here to stay, and it can be used for good, you know, as evidenced by my fantastic interview with Joe that had me asking more questions than I originally had in my notes to even ask. If you've made it to this point in the episode, I let Joe do his shameless plug on how to contact him, so now it's time for me to add in mine. I'd absolutely love to hear from you about what you think of the show or if you have any feedback or reviews. So if you have literally 2 seconds, please leave me a review in your podcast app. You can leave a comment if you'd like or just the stars, but just know that I appreciate all of the reviews and feedback I get. Not only do your 5-star reviews help me know that I'm bringing you content that you want to hear, but it also helps with the podcast app algorithms and gets the show out there to people that might enjoy listening in every week. Speaking of every week, I will be back next Thursday with another episode. And I don't know about you, but I'm getting kind of a little run down with this AI topic lately. I love the conversations we've had on the show, but I'm thinking it's time to put the AI topic on the shelf, and probably for a while, unless something crazy hits the news, since apparently as of today, statistically speaking, 16.66667% of my episodes are about AI, and that's if you include the bonus episode. There's just so many other cool stories and topics out there that I want to bring to the table, so next week I think we might get back into some of the other fun and crazy stories of the art and design world by getting back into a little bit of the true crime mystery side of things. So stay tuned for that coming in next Thursday's episode, and until then, stay artrageous. Series music created by Arenson. Music and transition sounds licensed from Motion Array. Artrageous is a proud partner of Stoveleg Media.
Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.